I'm the dude. So that's what you call me.
Once again, things that could have been brought to my attention yesterday!
Well, how the hell did you get the bees above the Frank? I mean, you...
I saved Latin. What did you ever do?
In case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Welcome to Drunk Monkeys Radio. My name is Matt Carrera, and I'm the film editor of Drunk Monkeys. You can find us online at drunkmonkeys.us. Today on the show, Bill Clinton receives oral sex from an intern, and that is the worst thing that a president will ever be accused of. We'll be talking the films of 1998 with my co-host Ryan Roach.
Hello.
And Lawrence Van Halstrom.
Hello.
Okay, so before we get into... Well, when should we do this? At what point do we? At what point do we break up with our audience and tell them that we're transitioning?
Right now.
Yeah, now it's you our series finale, right?
Yeah, it's our series finale. One of us will die tonight.
It feels like it might be me. So, Drunk Monkeys Radio is turning into Worth a Click, a movie review podcast.
Yes, which came from our discussion of some movie where we were saying it was worth the. Worth the watch, worth the rental, then change it to worth the click, because that's what you do now. You click
and,
on
and
the
that was catchphrase. No, you said it.
Yeah, I think it was me.
I think it was Ryan.
I thought
Ryan
it was said Lawrence. It. I thought, because I thought you said it the previous episode, and then you bring it up to Lawrence, like, hey, worth a click, right?
Yeah.
But I thought it was Lawrence.
No, I'm pretty sure it was Ryan. We have to go back to the tapes.
I definitely said it was worth a rental, and then we were like discussing like what we don't rent things anymore. But I think
I smell a clip show finale. I think I'm going to the archive.
Yeah, all right, man.
Well, you're the one who likes the Seinfeld finale so much. So
yeah, it's very good. Seinfeld finale.
I like it too.
Stand by. Oh, 1998 is when that show ended. So.
That's exactly right.
I'm in your corner with
that. Oh, really?
That.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah,
I like really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
I think it's one of the all-time great finales.
Yeah, it's a punchline on the viewer.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you're such an asshole you laughed at all these years.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. I don't know. Worth a rental, I guess.
What's the name of it?
The Endless, which makes sense when you watch it. But I can't spoil that part.
Yeah.
But.
It's funny how ancient the phrase worth a rental seems already. Like, I know you can still rent movies digitally, but it's...
It worth feels a stream.
Like, right, yeah. It'll be somewhere someday. You can see it for whatever you're already paying for that service.
Right, exactly. Not worth any extra money or effort. Worth a click, that's what you
said. Okay, there you go. It's click worthy.
Don't scroll past it.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. There you go.
All right. So anyway, we're changing our podcast to Worth the called Worth the Click, starting next or in like 2 weeks. So you think it'll update automatically, right? Or
we'll see. I will. I'll release a mini-sode with the details on once we get the specifics of how people are going to come over. I think we should be able to. If you're subscribed to us now. You should be able to just get the new episodes. It will come out and will suddenly be called Worth a Click instead of Drunk Monkeys Radio. But
we're going to have different segments. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we're rebooting. It's a new issue number one.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, it's a hard reboot.
We're all going to be played by different people.
That's right. Hopefully more charismatic main host, please.
And are part of a... podcast family, right? What is that called?
That's right. Zoetic Monkeys. We're teaming up with Zoetic Press. They have a couple of podcasts.
Zoetic, like Zodiac? Is that what it is? No?
No. Zoetic. What does Zoetic mean? Oh, man. Oh, please don't listen to this. Sorry. Look this up. No, it's really, really nice poetic meaning.
It's not poetic with a Z.
It's a real word?
Yeah, it's a real word. Of or relating to life, living, vital.
Okay.
Yeah. So there you go. So Zoetic, and of course Monkeys from Drunk Monkeys, and we're teaming up. We'll have this Ordinary Grace, my religion show, is going to be on the network as well, and then they have the Literary Whip, and I liked the book better. And actually, I like the book better for fans of our show. Is definitely something they'd be interested in because it specifically looks at movie adaptations. Of famous books.
Cool.
It's really
good to subscribe to that. That sounds good.
I like the I actually. Sorry. It's a really good show. Lise Quintana is the host, and co-host is
Stephen King.
No, but they did do have done The Shining, which was really interesting.
I just read Stephen King's latest, The Outsider, and he has a character in it who like hates the movie The Shining. I'm like, dude,
let it go.
Settle down.
Let it go. It's been a while. Kevin Sharp. That's the gentleman saying. So that's a great show, and we're checking out if you like us. So to finish off in grand style, we're going to talk about 1998, and it's interesting. We kind of got into a little bit of discussion beforehand. I was looking at this movie's list and kind of disappointed. I didn't see a lot to really draw from, except for some ones that really stood out as obvious classics. You know, I'm sure Saving Private Ryan will be on your list somewhere. It's not on my list, but I acknowledge it as a classic. But you were very excited, Ryan Roach. So we'll get into our list in a second. But first, let's start with where were you guys in 1998? Ryan, we'll start with you.
I actually moved back home pretty early on. I moved to San Diego, and then I moved to L.A. in the fall of 97, but didn't make it that time. And moved back home to Sacramento for 98 and all of 98, 99. So, yeah, I had nothing too eventful. I worked at Office Depot. I got my own apartment. I lived with my mom for a little while, then I got an apartment up in Sacramento, or Roseville, more accurately. And,
So this will be the first one of these best of the 90s episodes we do, where you weren't working at Hillcrest.
No more.
Yeah, disappointing.
We're I'm sure not quite as sad as you were in 1998. But you made it back.
Yeah, so I didn't have the access to even like a lot of the fun independent movies because there weren't any independent theaters in Roseville. So and one of my on my list that I'll mention is I had to drive to San Francisco to watch it.
Well, at least that was available to you. All right, Lawrence, where were you?
Yeah, so 1998, I got married.
Wow, I wondered.
Yeah,
I wondered
it's weird to think back because all these other 90s episodes, I felt like we were looking back to where I was.
When's your
August 1st.
Oh, wow. So you're almost
20 years. Yeah, almost 20 years, yeah. Wow. Yeah, I think that's double paper.
Double
for
paper.
20 years.
Yeah, yeah.
It's college ruled. Yeah, and also with that, so the previous times I've been in Richmond, this time we moved from Richmond to Richmond, Virginia to Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh, okay.
So after, so we got married partly because Ms. Von Hailstrom was going to grad school at UW-Madison. So we got married so we could move into family housing and move to, and also because we loved each other. And moved to Madison. And Madison was, a Midwest college town with a lot of good movie theaters, surprisingly. Okay. It was a good movie town at the time.
So Lil Von Hailstrom didn't come along for quite some time.
Right, we waited a while.
Yeah.
The smart thing to do.
Yeah.
You're a very responsible person, always, including bringing new persons into
exactly,
this world.
Right.
Well, early happy 20 years.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah
how
awesome.
About that? Yeah.
We'll have to do, like, wedding movies or something in August. Anniversary.
I think so. Lawrence looks already uncomfortable with that idea, which makes me like it all the more. All right. 1998 was one of the more significant years of my life, kind of up and down, good and bad. Like, it was kind of, again, I graduated in 97, and I was in school, but kind of about to drop out of school. My grandmother died at the beginning of the year, and I had my first job, my first girlfriend. And that job was selling credit card protection plans for Montgomery Ward.
Wow.
Which is a sentence that makes me sound like 5,000 years old.
Yeah, sounds like 1978.
Like none of those things exist.
Yeah, that's, I think, like a Raymond Carver character does that.
It was like my first run at being an adult. And it went about as well as any other year of being adult has ever gone. But
you were born in 79?
Yeah.
So you're like 19?
Okay. I was a young kid, young pup. And I think that's the year I got my driver's license, too, because it took me a while. It took me a while. I could not. I could not pass the California written test. It's so embarrassing. Wow. It's so embarrassing because it's the easiest damn test. I just was completely in my head about it. Huh. I could not because I passed in Missouri. Mm. Missouri is, I mean, shit. That's like, you know, 10 questions, I want to say. Really? It was like, or maybe 20, but it was ridiculously easy. And I thought, oh, okay, I got my permit. So I'm going to go to California now and get my license. And nope. I think I took it 4 times.
Wow.
It's very embarrassing. But yeah, so like 98 was a year where things started to like come together as for what my life at that point was going to be. And I saw a lot of movies. I remember really liking them at the time. As I look back, they all look like things that maybe, this is such an asshole phrase, but maybe I've kind of grown past, like they're just, I'm not into them anymore.
No, that's a big change. No,
that's a legitimate phrase.
Yeah. When you're in your early 20s.
Or not even
in your early 20s.
You're
19. Yeah.
I was not legally drinking.
I was 20.
Yeah. It is perfectly fine to disagree with your 19-year-old self.
Yeah.
To think that guy was a fool.
I'm constantly disagreeing with my 38-year-old self. So, so before we get into our list, now we're going to do a top five, as we always do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's good to start out with any honorable mentions. Let's do that up top. Ryan, do you have anything that got close to your list but didn't quite make it?
Yes, a whole bunch of things.
Because as we said, you really loved this year.
Yeah, right? I did.
Yeah,
not as much as next year. Next year is going to.
Yeah, next year is amazing.
Yeah. Okay, The Last Night, or just Last Night with the Canadian movie.
Oh, yeah, that was 98. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that would be on
that
your
was
list.
Great. I forgot it, yeah.
Run, Lola, Run. Happiness.
I thought that was 99.
No?
Oh, 98. Shit. Okay, all right. Maybe I was wrong.
Happiness, the Todd Solondz movie with the pedophile.
I'm aware.
Return to Paradise, Vince Vaughn movie, one of the last movies he did where he was still a serious actor. Dark City, which is the Roger Ebert's favorite movie.
I know. I never saw that though. Yeah.
It's about like the sci-fi dystopia thing where people's memories are erased and all their occupations and life positions are changed arbitrarily, and the whole city changes every like month or something. Right. I don't know. And my friend Jonathan and I had a joke, ongoing joke about whenever we get lost, we'd say, it's like Dark City, we've been here before and everything's different. Anyway. Rushmore, Clay Pigeons.
Also Vince Vaughn.
Yeah. And we're done. We got Swingers, Clay Pigeons, and Return to Paradise, and then we're done with good Vince Vaughn.
So you're not counting Psycho also from this year as good? Good. That's correct. That's the correct answer.
The Faculty, which is Rodriguez.
That's fine. Sure.
And I'd say Private Ryan's on my honorable mentions.
Really? Interesting. Yeah. So it didn't make my list. Did it make yours, Lawrence?
It did not make my list.
Okay. Hey.
That's an honorable mention.
I think most people would look at this year and think Saving Private Ryan was the best and it's not on the list.
Yeah. I mean, that first scene on
That's how we roll. We're so rebellious.
That first half hour or whatever is
it's great.
Incomparable to anything. Yeah. I mean, it was amazing. But, you know, that sort of carried you through for the rest of it, which isn't all that great. And I'm just going to say Meet Joe Black, not because I like the movie. I don't think it's a bad movie. But the scene where Brad Pitt gets hit by the car is the first time any of us ever saw anything like that. And holy shit, like the whole theater like fell apart. Now you see that on like, you know, in an insurance commercial. But that was the very first time that you see a CGI guy would go.
Right.
And you're like, wow, did that happen? Did Brad Pitt just die on film?
Yeah. Okay.
And that's it. Yeah.
All right, Lawrence, honorable mentions.
I guess I just have two.
Okay.
That didn't make my list. So The Thin Red Line, I think that's better than Saving Private Ryan.
As we've discussed.
Yeah. I didn't make my list. It's partly because I didn't want to rewatch it.
So, well, then, yeah, doesn't that, belong.
Yeah.
No, it's so long. You know. Babe, Pig in the City.
We're going to discuss that.
Okay, fantastic.
We'll discuss that.
I have not seen that, but I've heard it's better.
And probably whatever's on Ryan's list, on Ryan's actual top five list. It's probably worth mentioning, but I didn't bother with it.
Okay, a couple that got really close, and some of them are, because they're things I remember as good, but I haven't seen them in 20 years, so it kind of feels like the ones that are on the list, I've at least seen a couple of times in the intervening years, so I know solidly these were really like my type of movies, and they stood the test of time for me. Personally, So Out of Sight. I mean, Out of Sight's like a really good movie, but I haven't seen it since 1988 or 99. Probably I saw it on VHS, I'm sure. Smoke Signals. I really like that, based on Shimmer Alexei, who is now problematic. Cut and paste that bit of text for any actor we might want it. Morgan Freeman, now problematic. What Dreams May Come. This is the... there was a visceral reaction from Lawrence.
I never saw it, so what do I know? I just thought it was one of those movies that when I saw the ads for, I thought it was dumb. So this is, it's a 20-year-old reaction.
No, you're not wrong. It's kind of dumb, but the visuals are amazing.
Yeah.
Like, really amazing. So that's why it's worth an honorable mention, just for that. And Gods and Monsters. I don't know if that's going to pop up on anyone's list. But that was a good movie when I saw it. Okay, well, no, hold on. This is interesting. Well, I have 20-year-old memories of it as a good movie.
I don't know. I just thought it was kind of boring. I didn't care for it. I barely remember it.
I liked it. And what else we have here? A Simple Plan. We talked about that on the show. And when I rewatched it, it didn't quite hold up enough to make my top five.
The book is better. Put that on the podcast.
That's right.
That's the book is... so much better that I came and watched that movie.
Then Life is Beautiful got very close to this list because I loved it then. I don't know what I'd make of it now. It's one of those things like, should this movie even exist kind of things. But I thought it was a pretty well-made movie, and I really liked it.
I was willing to defend it in 1998, but I haven't seen it since then.
Yeah, I don't know what I'd make of it. Yeah. But the best movie that I saw in 1998, and one of my favorite movies of all time, is Knights of Cabiria. The Fellini movie was re-released. It was re-released, yeah, for the movie from the 50s, Federico Fellini. It's a great movie, and I rewatched that. I rewatched that on Filmstruck, so there you go, a little worth-a-click preview. That is worth a click. Check out Knights of Cabiria. It is an absolute classic.
Yeah, and probably one of Fellini's most accessible movies.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a good entry point, and I saw it at the Castro. I was visiting in San Francisco, so I saw it at the Castro Theater. And here it was on the big screen. It was one of my first, like, foreign movies that I, like, made a point to go watch. I mean, obviously, Life is Beautiful is, you know, is a foreign movie as well. But, like, an old foreign movie. I felt like such a grown-up, like, such a cool person. But then it was just, like, an astonishing movie. And I really love it. So, anyway, that as far as I'm concerned, even all the things that are on my list, that's the best movie I saw in 1998. But let's get into our top fives. Ryan, start with you. What's your number five?
My number five is the movie that I went to San Francisco to go see, and it was The Opposite of Sex, Don Roos.
Sure.
Which was a movie with Christina Ricci, Martin Donovan, Lisa Kudrow, and Lyle Lovett. Right. And
Lyle Lovett used to be in a lot of movies in the 90s, and then he just isn't.
And it was kind of like, first it was like, wow, that's weird, he can kind of act, and then it was just sort of accepted that he was just an actor.
But yeah.
And then... I don't know.
Maybe, like, Dwight Yoakam kind of did that, too.
Yeah. Maybe Julia Roberts buried him or something. Like, no one can hire him. But, so it's a movie about Christina Ricci, who plays this acerbic, spoiled sort of riff off of, like, the sexpot kind of femme fatale role. Yep. But she's very, like, you know, not really that. She's just play acting. The character's pretending to be that way, but she's really not. And she's just very angry and got her guards up. And she goes to live with her stepbrother, who's a lot older, Martin Donovan, who's gay. And Martin Donovan has a young lover, played by Ivan Serge, who was never in anything.
Okay, yeah.
And she winds up seducing the young lover and stealing all of Martin Donovan's money and running off with the young lover. And then he pursues her with Lisa Kudrow, who is his best friend, who's also secretly in love with him. And it's a fun, like, sort of caper kind of movie. It's a voiceover narration throughout, Christina Ricci doing the femme fatale thing, but then like constantly exposing her vulnerabilities, and it's really good. I like it a lot. Have you seen it?
I did. I saw it. Saw then, because I had a huge crush on Christina Ricci.
Oh, really?
So I was all about this, and it's funny hearing, because again, it's something that probably could have been on that movie set. Are lodged in my mind as good list, but hearing that plot, it's such a convoluted plot. It's like so hard to explain. But I remember it's one of those movies that I just really liked the experience of watching it beyond what was happening. I just really liked the tone of it and the acting, and everyone was great. Ritchie was really, really good in it.
I liked it a lot. It's good. And I was happy I drove to San Francisco to watch it.
Right. Lawrence, have you seen that one?
Never saw it. No.
Yeah. You might like it.
I wonder how it would hold up.
No way to judge.
I did, speaking of Christina Ricci, when I was trying to find 1998 movies, I rewatched Pecker, the John Waters movie. She's in that. Yeah. Yeah. And that, it's so broad and cartoony.
I don't like any of John Waters.
I'm on the same page. I really don't. Honestly, the only thing vaguely related to John Waters I like is the Hairspray musical with John Travolta. It's very fun. that's a copy of a copy of a copy. Yeah. Like, it has nothing to do with John Waters. Yeah, really. Yeah.
Pecker, it's a broad satire of the art world that doesn't exist anymore. So it's just.
Was it like making fun of modern art or something?
But like contemporary art at the time with the New York gallery scene and how anyone could, the prices went up for just random people.
It's a garbage can lid.
But
that's not art.
it's a satire world that doesn't exist anymore. And it's just kind of sad. Yeah. And not
also,
that
funny. Eddie Furlong, one of his last roles. Yeah.
He'll be in one of my movies.
Interesting. Okay. I literally have no idea what that is. I can't remember what he is. Like, suddenly, for me, it's T2 and Pecker, and then he disappeared into smoke. I got no idea. Yeah. He got an Infinity Ward. Spoiler.
Is he alive still, or did he die?
I think he's alive. Okay. Brad Renfro is the one.
Yeah.
Sadly. Okay. No, RIP.
I didn't know that. How sad.
Yeah, he died.
Oh, yeah.
John Everett is coming back. Yeah.
Well.
All right. Why are you laughing?
No, it was just like such awkward. Now I'm going to turn to Lawrence. Like, what's your number five?
Well, maybe, as Ryan said, maybe it's for the best.
You don't remember saying that?
About who?
River Phoenix.
Oh. Well, no, I said that.
Because he may have made some poor choices if he had lived.
Right.
That's true.
Let's just keep these people in amber. Although, let's say, like, there would be nothing sadder than an 80-year-old John Lennon.
Yeah.
Yeah. The 40-year-old John Lennon
would be probably be like, all lives matter. So, like, it would probably be bad.
Absolutely. No,
the saddest, corniest person would be a middle-aged Jim Morrison.
Oh, God.
Yeah. He would have done a duets album in the 90s.
With Natalie Cole.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, now we will come to Lawrence for your number.
All right, number five. My first two picks here, I'm just the boring ones to get them out of the way. The boring and obvious ones. Rushmore. I love Rushmore.
Yeah, Rushmore's great.
Yeah, I've seen it a million times. I rewatched it. It still holds up. It's a great movie, but everyone loves it. I don't feel like talking about it.
I haven't seen that since. I haven't seen that since 1998. Yeah.
Really? Oh, it's really good.
I wanted to put it on my list, but I barely even remember what it's about. I should watch that.
No, I've watched it many times.
Yeah, I just rewatched it earlier this week. Last week.
So it's solidly on your list.
It's solidly on my list. Yeah, I mean, everyone loves Wes Anderson. It's the first movie with the real.
I can assure you that's not true. But
everyone loves early Wes Anderson.
Every white person our age loves Wes Anderson.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you. Thank
you. There's the first one where it really Bottle Rockets is my favorite of his movies. This one is the first one where you really see the Wes Anderson style.
They're kind of present in like proto form in Bottle Rocket, but not the same.
Right. Yeah. This is the first one you get the, the dead on shots of people and everything symmetrical. Yeah. It still feels like it exists in the real world. It doesn't exist in like the storybook world that all the rest of his movies have been put in, but it does feel. I remember in 1998, I got a computer and the internet and everything, and started making a website. So I had, I did movie reviews. I'm trying to and I remember. Yeah, I wrote a review of Rushmore. Nice. Yeah, hand coded HTML and everything.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I had so one that was God awful poetry.
Yeah.
God awful poetry. Yeah.
I didn't even have.
Yeah, it was an Earthlink page, earthlink.net/ whatever.
I think mine was
I think
GeoCities.
We had a combined email address. You know, a shared email address. So that was there's like earthlink.net/ blah blah blah.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. So I wrote in that review. Pretentiously saying that it's
wait, you still have that?
No. But I remember writing it.
Yeah.
I remember what I said. It was that like the super symmetrical speaking directly characters speaking directly at the camera is going to, in 20 years, will feel as dated as the super zooms and the graduates do now at 1998. So
you're not wrong. Yeah? I mean, it's very time specific.
Yeah. But it's...
It actually doesn't really happen that often now. So I don't even know if it's a cliche. It would be like... It's pretty rare that people speak directly to camera.
Yeah, but I'm saying that it feels like something from that moment.
Yeah, like a
cutting edge thing that wouldn't stand the test of time. But it still works. It's still funny. The one thing that doesn't stand the test of time, though, and this is just with the Me Too era and everything, and just
being it's a movie about stalkers.
Yeah, it's a movie about stalkers. Yeah. The Miss Cross is there only to tolerate the whims of Max Fisher and Henry Bloom as they do their psychopathic
things. There's no reason. It is one of the most unbelievable pairings for her to be with Bloom.
Yeah, she's even second fiddle to her dead husband.
Yeah, he gets like
she sleeps in his room with all of his Wes Anderson-y nostalgic things in his, in his room.
Yeah.
But anyways, but the it's also the first movie that really took advantage of the Wes Anderson rock. You know, there's all the Who.
And the Kinks.
Yeah, the Kinks. Yeah, everybody. Yeah, that stuff. Yeah. So it still holds up. It's still really funny. It's in our opening segment. We got the Max Fisher line.
That's right. Well, that was your vote.
Yeah, I really wanted in that. Yeah, because I always think about that too. I just wrote a hit play. Can I have a little drink to unwind myself? That's so funny. He wrote a hit play.
Can he have a drink?
Yeah, there's lots of little things in there that are still really amusing, and it's still a solid movie, and it's paced really well too.
It is.
It's less than 90 minutes long. It feels like a lot more happens than what actually
it does.
Yeah,
it's packed because every scene has so much in it. Yeah. It feels expansive, even though it runs by briskly, so you don't get bored of it. And that's why I've rewatched it so many times in 20 years, because it's just really fun to watch.
Yeah, it is fun. Yeah.
It's not homework. There's nothing about it that feels like, you know, I can't get into Darjeeling Limited. I got to try to force my way through that one again. But yeah, no, this is a fun movie. That's it.
Yeah, there you go. Number five.
Cool.
Yeah, it's worth another click.
So my number five is Pleasantville. Yeah. I don't know if this is on your list or not, but
it is.
Okay, cool. So maybe we won't talk too much about it.
Well, we can just do it. I'll just make it my number four. I think it is my number four, actually. Anyway, so yeah.
Okay, we'll just tag team here on Pleasantville. So it's about have you seen this?
I saw like the end of it on network TV.
Back when it was movie of the week. It was a major release movie that had been out like 3 years before. Two 90s teenagers get sucked into a black and white sitcom, you know, and those teenagers are Reese Witherspoon and Tobey Maguire in early-ish roles. They weren't completely new, because I think McGuire had been in The Ice Storm.
And Election had been the year before, right?
Or Election's the year after. Yeah, exactly. So this is...
Cruel Intentions was maybe before?
That might have been this year as well. Might have been 98 as well.
What year was The Ice Storm?
We talked about it last year, I thought.
Was it 97?
Yeah, I believe so.
Was it on my list?
It was on my list, I think.
Huh. I probably... Because I really liked it when it came out. Anyway, never mind.
Flip show.
Yeah,
we'll find out. So it was early-ish roles for those guys, and they're very good in it. And it's just really one of the most inventive, like, premises and everything that's just done really well. Like because these kids from the modern world go into this 50s sitcom, and as they kind of introduce like the idea of passion to this very staid world, like literally orgasm, right? She fucks Paul Walker, and the moment that they have an orgasm for the first time, like a rose turns real red, like everything's black and white, and it turns real red.
Right. You know, and it took advantage of being able to do that. That was like Ted Turner and colorizing thing. That was just the start of that.
Yeah.
And but then it wasn't just, you know, sex. Like, at first it sort of implied that was the key to it, but it was just like
emotion,
experiencing something real, like Joan Allen, you know, masturbates in the tub,
right.
it's a great movie, and it doesn't like you would expect that to be like, oh, like Tobey Maguire and Reese Witherspoon like learn what it's like in simpler times or something, but no, it's like they bring joy to those characters, not the opposite.
Yeah,
I like that a lot.
And also, I mean, it turns into, which I don't know is quite as successful, it kind of becomes this sort of thing about intolerance, you know.
Oh, yeah, it was like a racism allegory.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
There's colored people and...
Right, exactly. You know, so black, that's black a people. Little... a little state even for then. But it does work because the actors are so good. Like, I think, you know, Bill Macy really sells that kind of conflict that he's having, especially once he realizes that his wife is involved.
Right, and then Gary Oldman is such a great villain, of course.
Right.
He's great and everything.
Right.
Yeah. And they're worried about, like, culture turning everyone... color, and he's like, they got rid of bowling alley.
It's one of the ones, as I was looking at the years, the movies of that year that stood out as just something really interesting and inventive for the time, and something that I think still the visuals and the idea holds up. I think if you did a movie like this now and it had never done before, it would still be like novel, that idea of it, you know?
Yeah, that would be interesting if they did that now, or if they just went back to the 80s or something, or instead of the 50s, maybe. I don't know.
So, we'll
skip over. Yeah, that's
okay.
My four.
All right, very good. All right,
so Lawrence, we'll come to your number four.
My number four, The Big Lebowski.
Oh, wow, yeah. Okay,
all right. I left it off the list.
These are movies.
I know, I love The Big Lebowski. It's one of my most watched movies.
Oh, yeah,
there is. It's like it's one of those movies that's been talked to death, and everyone loves it. So I don't really feel like I can say anything more about it that people haven't. And people,
just funny. It's just great.
It's hilarious.
Writing.
Yeah, it's great. I can't say. I mean, I saw it in the theater, and I didn't like it. I wasn't totally sold on it after that first time.
Nor was I. It's on my list because of you.
Oh, awesome. Okay. Yeah.
Because I had seen it once in the theater and sort of like, it's fine. It's like second, third tier Coens. And then you sold me on it when we met in 2003. Yeah. Like, no, you got to watch it again. So you gave me the DVD. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's great.
It's really funny.
Yeah,
that's hilarious. There's so much in there. There's just there's so many, like, the inside jokes that we all know. But, like, there's punchlines that you don't realize are punchlines until the second or third time you see them. They're like pre-punchlines. They're foreshadowing punchlines. That's the dude is writing his check at Ralph's for like 79 cents. And then at the time the checkout woman they're like, the TV's on and it's George Bush talking about this aggression will not stand. And so you hear that, and then like the second or third time, 10th time you see it.
Yeah, where he got that from.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
This expression will not stand, man. Let's just spend the rest of the podcast quoting The Big Lebowski. It's so much fun. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I
does the word vagina offend you?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so much. I remember seeing in the theater, not being too impressed, and then like seeing some other friends who thought it was great, and then they were talking about, yeah, that's kind of funny. And then when it came on the video, watching it again.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just. Yeah, it's hilarious, and it's not
partly
just,
it was by that time I had lived in LA for a little bit.
Oh yeah, yeah,
and that is definitely
honestly, I don't know if I would have ever moved out to LA if not for The Big Lebowski planting the seed of LA not being a horrible place.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure that's the seed it plants.
No, but
it doesn't feel very
because you know, up you grow up on
oh,
East,
I think it
you
does,
grow
it
up
does.
On the East Coast, and everyone has like this East Coast disdain for LA.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though,
we don't even engage with or even know about.
Yeah, and it's totally ridiculous. It's like people complain about LA being a driving town. Like anyone who doesn't live in New York or Boston or Chicago, like they're like everyone lives in a driving town. You know, it's not ridiculous, silly thing. Yeah. And there are this, you know, or just where it's just palm trees and rollerblades and whatever else is in the 80s and 90s that you grew up with seeing in LA. But yeah, but it's felt more like an authentic LA. And
the one thing it gets absolutely right about LA is that no one fucking listens to anybody. Like that's what the entire Big Lebowski is about. That I've had so many conversations in LA, like especially like just casual conversations that are just like one person completely like just ranting, and then a person going and then someone trying to jump in. It's like the totally Donnie, shut the fuck up, Donnie. Like Johnny trying to like chime in because he's paying half attention. Walter's not paying attention to anybody. The dude is in his own head too, and then he gets irritated. And like I've had so many LA conversations like that.
Yeah, apparently Jeff Bridges was supposed to play it way more like just a stoner dude who didn't care about anything.
Yeah.
But John Goodman was so irritating that it like influenced his performance, and he was just Walter.
Yeah, because he's really he's constantly exasperated.
Yeah. And he couldn't just be the guy that just didn't care about anything, because Walter just was constantly fucking up everything they did, and it was so aggressive about it.
Right.
And it was just these little tangents, like the landlord.
Yeah.
Like, it's the 8th.
Yeah, it happened.
Dude, it's the 8th. Far out.
Yeah, far out.
But also, then.
They ain't going to my dance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
It was some notes. Yeah. Can you take some notes?
Yeah. Yeah.
Give me some notes.
You know what? We were wrong. This should have been our number one.
Yeah, I tried to get you guys.
I know you did. Yeah. This is the first episode honestly, where we didn't have a consensus number one. Yeah. We really should have.
Yeah, seriously. It's my real number one. I just wanted to
take it. I left it off almost entirely because I wanted five other movies to talk about, but it's really my number two after.
Yeah. It's my number one, probably number three all time, honestly.
It's like number eight or something of my all time, I would say. It's after Fargo. It's my second Coen Brothers.
I just get tired of how many people love it.
It's become a thing, But like, everything becomes a thing. It doesn't mean we have to hate it because it doesn't affect the thing.
Yeah, the thing itself is great.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's great. It's really great.
All right. So my number four is Pi. I don't know if anyone has this on the list.
Oh, yeah, no, but that could be an honorable mention.
I have not seen that, actually.
Really? Oh, yeah, so good. So this is Aronofsky's first movie and kind of set, you know, the template for the rest of his sort of weirdo career. Exactly. It has that same sort of claustrophobic thing that Mother has, but this was because, he was a shoestring budget. So he made that work to his advantage, though. Because it feels like everything is really like tight on this lead character, and he lives in these little tight, cramped spaces, and he's a paranoid, you know? Mm-hmm. And so he's like this, it's really hard to like describe, but it's like he has this whole theory that if you understand like numbers and the numbers of pi, then you could like understand the world. You could, you know, predict the stock market. And like there's this Hasidic group that is like tracking him down because they have the secret name of God in numbers. They want to like, suss out so they can bring around the messianic age and everything. And so he's like constantly paranoid. And then he has these huge headaches and everything as well. And and there are prolonged sequences of a thing called trepanning, which is all I'll say here. If you don't, it's worth not spoiling what happens in Pi at the end of Pi if you haven't seen it. But it's an intense movie.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I saw it in the theater when it came out, and I haven't seen it since.
Oh, you saw it in the theater?
Yeah.
I caught up to it on video after, because the groundswell of this is a really amazing movie was loud enough that even, I don't know if I heard about it on the internet or Siskel and Ebert or wherever I heard about it. Siskel was still alive. Yes.
Yeah.
I think he died maybe the next year. Yeah. But anyway, it wasn't Ebert and everybody like it was for a while. But yeah, it got to me, and I was really knocked out. And so after that, I think the next thing he did was Requiem for a Dream, right?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah,
that was in 2000.
And that's how I knew about that, and I was on board.
Love.
Yeah.
Virgin.
Yeah. So and I think you'll like this. Yeah, if you like that, you like Mother, this is very much in that style of Aronofsky.
I liked all of his movies so far. So no one was like,
you didn't
not
like the
fast.
Do you like The Fountain? I thought you didn't like The Fountain.
I haven't seen The Fountain, actually. Because I heard it was so, like, dissed that I never went and saw it.
But yeah, I like it, but you know, it hits my gooey spiritual stuff, so I'm sure, you know. But it's very hopeful Aronofsky. Yeah. It's the only hopeful Aronofsky there is.
I'd say Noah's pretty hopeful.
I never saw Noah, actually.
Oh, really?
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, they get off the boat and they repopulate the earth.
Right. That's it. So, Ryan, we'll come to your number three.
Okay, my number three is Steven Soderbergh's Out of Sight.
Okay, great.
Which I absolutely loved, and I also saw that in 99, I remember. And it's by far, I think, the most sexual chemistry between two actors in any movie. Like, I honestly believe Jennifer Lopez and George Clooney had the most... I've never seen anything that electric before or since.
Huh.
And I think it's just...
Well, the trunk scene is pretty...
Yes,
pretty intense.
And it just sort of took my breath away, because it's not, you don't really, or at least I don't really get into that too much usually.
Yeah.
And I felt like I really, really believed it when they got together. You're just like, like it just felt like right and good. And I don't even remember much about the rest of the movie. It's like a crime caper. And
like Don Cheadle's
Don Cheadle right? falls yeah. down and shoots himself at one point. That's how he dies, is there's like a catch in the carpet. And then it's the thing from Breaking Bad, actually. Ah. And then he like chips again and yeah. like shoots himself. And I remember that being pretty funny. But what I mostly remember is the sexual chemistry between.
Sure.
Did you see that in George
Clooney? I saw it, yeah. I saw it in 98 and I haven't seen it since.
Yeah, he like.
I remember liking it.
Bank robbery, he takes her yeah, hostage, yeah. and they're hiding in a trunk, and they just like start flirting in the trunk.
Yeah, I remember the style, the consciously yeah, yeah. throwback sort of. I mean, I wasn't aware of it at the time, but now that I've seen new wave movies, it's mm-hmm. a very new wave style that he's doing with the zoom ins and the close ups, you know. But it was very like electric and like mm-hmm. very like propelled the movie forward in a really interesting way that became what we think of as Soderbergh.
Definitely his best yeah. movie, I think. Soderbergh. I don't really know what to make of him. His movies are so all over the place.
His movies are always worth seeing. They're not always good.
They're just like, they vary in quality more than most directors or any director I can really think of. They're just all over the map.
Yeah. I have a lot of respect for that in one sense, but then at the same time, like, it doesn't make me excited to see his movies.
Right. You know, I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah. Like, it could be great, but it could be.
Yeah. I'm really glad someone like him exists, though.
Yeah.
He is someone who can bounce back and forth between big.
Yeah, and then he's been able to consistently make movies, right. Which is really cool in this era.
It seems like he does what he wants to do.
Right, for sure.
But what he wants to do is not what's in his. We'll come to Lawrence for your number three.
All right, number three, Smoke Signals on your mention.
Yeah.
And again, it is problematic now that Sherman Alexie he's been Me Too'd.
Yeah. Sherman Alexie.
He's an American writer, author, and he wrote.
The book that is based on short stories from his book called The Lone Ranger and Tonto, Fist Fight in Heaven. And then
it's one of the all time great story collection and titles. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Since then, he's become more famous for Diary of a Part-Time Indian.
Did he play Tonto?
No. He's just he's one of the few household names, mostly household names, in literary fiction, and he's used that fact to be not right with women.
Yeah, to be creepy with ladies.
Yeah, to be creepy with women.
Yeah, and it was not just the not right. It was the I will get you published if you fuck.
Right. Yeah. It's one thing to use your status as
to try to get laid. Morgan Freeman seems like a creep. But as far as I've seen, he's not like said, I will get you fired if you don't fuck me, or I will do this for you if you fuck me. And Sherman Alexie very much is like, this will happen for you if you let me do this.
Right. Yeah.
Which sucks. Okay.
Yeah, it does. Anyway,
the movie's great.
The movie's good. Yeah.
So, what is the movie?
Yeah. Oh, you know what? Also, it's released by Miramax.
Well, what are you going to do with that?
Any movies we talk about from the 90s.
All 90s movies.
So it's basically a road movie about two young American Indian guys who
one Adam Beach who still gets a lot of, he's kind of the most well-known most well-known Native American actor. He was on SVU, I think.
So he finds out that his long estranged father has died, so he goes to get his ashes, and he's partnered with his annoying friend who likes to tell stories in the Native American oral tradition.
Yeah,
there's lots of inside jokes.
They play it on purpose.
It's directed by Chris Iyer, who's American Indian, and the whole cast and crew were American Indian, and so it was like intentionally meant to be like this, basically mainstream Native American movie. Uh-huh. And still, has there been anything else since then about contemporary life?
No. Yeah. Right, like not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, I know Chris Iyer, the director, did make some other movies.
Wind River has a major Native American plotline in it.
It does, but Jeremy Renner's the lead,
is
right?
Jeremy Renner and Elizabeth Olsen, but yeah, apparently there's a big
Smoke Signals. It's a very basic movie. It's the kids go on a road trip and they come back and that's the movie. But it's also really about stories. There's like the one kid, Thomas builds the fire, and then his friend Victor. So Victor is the one whose father has died, and Thomas builds the fire. He's really a nerd, basically.
Yeah.
Wears a suit.
Yeah. Big huge glasses, and the ponytails, the two ponytails.
And then Victor is this wants to be just a cool guy. There's one scene there. He's trying to teach him Thomas how to be an Indian, how to be. You never smile. You gotta sit just like this, and you gotta wipe that grin off your face.
Yeah.
You gotta be a warrior.
Yeah.
You know, and they're all self-aware and everything.
Yeah.
But it is about stories. There's also Gary Farmer plays the father. There's lots of flashbacks of the father. So there's this constantly people telling stories. They go when they get to where their father lived. Irene Bedard is there. She famous as the voice of Pocahontas. She was like actually the biggest star at the time in that movie.
Interesting.
And then she tells a story about their father. It kind of is like she's telling a story about the father telling her a story.
Yeah.
So it's just this neat thing. And then the Gary Farmer is just a great actor too. And he's telling the story about playing basketball against some film Jesuits. With his son, in the movie she's telling the story about him telling the story, but then if you see in the movie is him on a basketball court telling the story to no one,
right?
And it's just this really neat thing that happens, and
it's like Reservoir Dogs a little bit,
Joy stories upon stories, and it's just this matter of fact movie that the end. I'll be honest, the end. There's a little bit too many endings in the movie. I did just rewatch it.
You did, early.
There's lots of resolutions. It's kind of want the movie to wrap up, but they come back and they say hi to everyone we saw in the beginning. It's like, come on, again. But it's really good. It's understated. There are a lot of flaws there. There's like the acting sometimes it's really hit or miss.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not everyone is the greatest actor. There's a lot of amateur actors. And then Victor, during a climatic part of the movie, Victor cuts off all of his hair, and then the rest of this movie is obviously wearing this horrible wig. I actually read an interview with the director afterwards, who was saying it was like, for 10 years I said that the wig wasn't a big deal, but now after 10 years I can say that was a horrible wig. And he talks about when he got it on set and he saw it, because he remember approving the wig. And then when he saw the actor wearing the wig, the guy says, hey dude, how do I look? And he says, you look great. And then he says, he walked away and he just started crying. He felt like, oh my god, I ruined my movie.
Don't you say, please cut your hair for a movie?
There's a reason for that. That if you were an American Indian actor, you're going to be cast in movies where you need long hair. You didn't to ask him to cut his hair.
Yeah,
would ruin his career for a year or two. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So, at the time when he was kind of on the rise too,
right,
it would have been really bad. And because of this movie, he I think maybe got a part in Windtalkers and stuff, and he kind of took off from there. Low key took off. Like he's not a huge star, but he's again really him and maybe Graham Greene and Wes Studi, but they're older.
Right.
He was kind of like one of the few young, good looking star potential Native Americans that have really been on screen in forever.
Right,
you know.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Yeah, it's on Netflix, right?
I don't know.
Is that where you watch? Where'd you watch it?
DVD. From the library.
Okay. Speaking of terrible Native American actors, was the lady from Northern Exposure in it?
She wasn't there. She is. She's in there.
She does what she's supposed to do.
She and her friend are driving in a car. They're just driving around the reservation in a car that goes backwards. They're just driving back. Driving
that's
reverse,
right.
Yeah.
That's right. Oh shit.
Yeah.
Northern Exposure. That's a great show. As far as I remember, I'm going to keep it in my memory forever as a great show and hope it holds up. So my number three is Babe, Pig in the City.
Hey,
that's where it ends up. Yeah, I really like this one. And first of all, the original is legit one of my favorite movies of all time. It absolutely is. I love Babe.
Okay.
I love it. I don't know why you're meeting it with such disdain, Ryan. But I love Babe. It is a sweet and wonderful and charming and darling movie. And you just have all your little...
I'm sure my nephew and niece agree.
It's a very, very sweet movie. But this one is interesting in what it takes from that and the kind of like odd darkness. Because the first one was directed by Chris Noonan, produced by George Miller. This one is directed by George Miller.
I did not know that. Mad Max, George Miller.
Absolutely.
Maybe I will watch this.
Too.
It's worth seeing. It's really good.
It is for the visuals because it's, Babe all takes place on this farm, because he was a sheep herding pig, which again, from one of the great movies of all time, Ryan, about a sheep herding pig. And so this sheep herding pig goes to the city with, now one of the things that kind of sucks is I really love Cromwell in the original. and he obviously didn't want to be that involved in this. So he's like, he's knocked out of commission, and he's not killed, but basically within like the first couple minutes. And so Babe and the farmer's wife go off to the big city. And the city is like an amalgam of a bunch of different cities in this really interesting way. Mm-hmm. And again, it's just these really like what you would think of as George Miller visuals, just that kind of like really intense, like great production design. And it's just a really, really great-looking movie.
It gets deeply sad. Yeah,
well, and dark disturbing. And sad. Yeah, I don't know if you remember disturbing. The scene where Babe, you know, they go to stay at this like hostel or whatever, and there's all these different animals, dogs and chimps. Chimp, I think, voiced by Stephen Wright.
Right. Yeah.
And the dogs go chasing Babe through the street, and it's a dark, like disturbing, like kind of little chase scene. But then it's even worse because there's this one dog that's on a like a wheelchair, like one of those little like the dog has the back wheelchair, you know. And so it's going over this bridge, and the dog falls off, and it's choking. It is like choking from like dangling above the water, and Babe has to like save it. And that's how they know that he has a good heart. Because again, as in the greatest movie of all time, now Babe, it is all about bringing people together. Uh-huh. And that is what Babe and the Pig in the City is
there's
about.
There's that great, it's almost like this communion scene.
Yeah.
Where the gumballs, I guess it is a communion scene.
Yes,
yeah. And then like the chimp is saying, thank the pig. Thank you, pig. Thank the pig.
Yeah. I'm really glad someone else is on board with this.
Yeah, and there's also, I haven't seen it in a long time, but there's a point where they get captured, and they're like the one chimp is always wearing clothes, and like when he's stripped of his clothes, and then when he finally gets it to the point where he's able to peel his clothes back on, it's like he restores his dignity, and it's just like this.
Oh, and maybe it's the orangutan,
scene.
Right?
Yeah, the orangutan.
This old orangutan.
The orangutan putting his clothes back on and just regathering his dignity. It's like this really touching,
genuinely moving
scene. Genuinely moving scene. Yeah, that's
is this animatronics or is it CGI or whatever?
I think it's real animals with animatronic mouths.
Oh, okay.
I think that's how they did it.
Yeah. I haven't seen it, and I need to see that again.
I think it's on Netflix. Okay, thanks. But yeah, it's good. It's a really fun and just consistently inventive and like touching and. I guess the analog today is like the Paddington movies are supposed to be like that, you know, like they kind of like shock you with how much actually there are. Oh, well, it was actually a really good movie. That was actually a movie.
Yeah, I do remember there is at the very end, there's sort of a little bit too long of an action set.
Yes, that is definitely a weakness and kind of a maybe prolonged fat joke. As well, because she's already kind of a big girl, and she's in the big suit bouncing around. Like, all right, that happens for a while. Mm-hmm. Other than that,
it's great. It's I really need to see it again.
Okay, Ryan, you're number two.
My number two is American History X.
That was on my almost list, but I haven't seen it in a long time. It's good.
Okay, so it was famously directed by Tony Kaye, sort of, and then Edward Norton apparently took over production. Tony Kaye wanted his name off of it, but couldn't, for legal reasons or whatever, couldn't quite get his name off of it, but he disavowed the movie as terrible, but it's not. It's really, really great. I thought it was, so I don't know if he deserves the credit or if Edward Norton deserves the credit. Apparently Edward Norton does, but it's this movie about these people a long time ago. They were called white supremacists. We don't have that anymore.
Yeah, well, thank God. Right? Thank God.
Edward Norton plays a white supremacist who curb stomps a black man and goes to prison.
Yeah.
And the curb stomping.
That's one of the most intense scenes ever.
Yeah. And it's told in flashback of him getting out of prison and coming back to his old life where Stacey Keach was like the Klan leader. Right. Edward Furlong, as I mentioned.
That's right, yeah. I should have got that right away from that. Yeah, I forgot he was the kid brother.
Yeah, and but we slowly learn from the present day that Furlong doesn't feel that way anymore, and he's changed, and we see what happened to him. Edward Norton doesn't feel that way anymore.
But Furlong does.
Right, that's right,
what he's
right.
afraid of,
because he's taught his brother to be that way.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you see the flashback and see him befriend a black man in the prison, and then what happens to him in the prison. He's gang raped by some white supremacists in the prison. And then he gets out and he wants to like turn over a new leaf. And I remember watching it and thinking, you know, and it could be the story about a man who, you know, finds grace and finds forgiveness and changes his life. And that's what it is about. But it felt like way too easy. And then you get the stinger
ending.
At the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's really effective and it really like, you know, you can't always just get forgiven and move on. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
There are prices you have to pay. Yeah. Biblical prices that you have to pay sometimes.
Yeah. Lawrence, we'll come to you for your number two.
All right. Number two. We're up to number two already. Run, Lola, Run.
I really did like not see that on the list. It's a great movie.
It was actually released in the U.S. in 1999, but it showed up on the internet as 1998.
Still
counts. Yeah, I count it. Yeah, and so I remember I saw it in the theater and was just thought it was mildly fun.
Huh.
But in the years since, and I just rewatched it actually last night. Watched all the end of it last night. Yeah. It's a lot more than just a fun movie.
Oh,
there's a lot happening in there. So quick plot synopsis. A girl, her boyfriend has lost $10,000 that he owes to some gangsters. And he calls her and says, I need your help. And so she says, I'll be there in 20 minutes. Or he's like, at 12 o'clock noon, I will do something drastic to get the money. He says, don't do that. Give me 20 minutes. I'll get the money. So then she runs to get money. And then
it's like a video game.
Yeah. So everything goes. And she gets to her boyfriend. Things don't go exactly as planned. And then she gets shot and dies. Mm-hmm. And they're like 20 minutes into the movie. And then she wakes up and everything happens again. Things are slightly different. So you go through this three times.
Mm-hmm. It's like Groundhog Day, except for she doesn't know that she's repeating. Like,
yeah, exactly. Right, yeah. It's just completely like alternate history kind of things.
Right, yes. But then there also are some things that do build on the previous run throughs. So there's so it's like the movie remembers or the audience remembers, and the movie's smart enough that it's just not a mistake that's intentional that these things are being built upon each other. As she randomly runs past people each time, like you'll see little shots of their future.
Right? Yeah, I love that.
The kid on the bike who one of them becomes home one time he becomes homeless, and there's the woman who either first one time she becomes wins the lottery, second time around she. What if she dies or in the hospital?
Yeah.
So all these things happen. So it's just random things. So I mean, it is a movie just about fate and free will. Mm-hmm. Do you have it? Do you not? There's lots of like symbols of spirals and circles and things. There's it's more than just a fun movie.
I remember it as a very deep movie. Like the first time I saw it, really knocked. It was on video.
Uh-huh.
So it was like it was probably in 2000 when I finally saw it.
And that's our podcast dog.
There's our podcast dog making yet another appearance here, Georgie. It's Tom Twyker.
Tom Tickver.
Tickver. Okay, that's how it is. Yeah, I never heard it pronounced. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but who I think would go on to work with Wachowskis a lot, right? I think he worked on Sense8 and maybe even Cloud Atlas. I can't remember.
What is a cinematographer? Right, yeah.
I think it's a director,
Right, yeah. And he did a movie, the movie after that was called Heaven. And I remember seeing that, and seeing that movie made me reevaluate Run, Lola, Run. It's like it made me realize that, this guy is doing a lot more than just a fun video game movie.
Right.
This is something else. So that made me
first time I saw it that made me think, because some of them are like really like jarring, like with how like about that kind of aspect of how random life can be and just you never know. And so like, that really, I remember locking in on those moments and then kind of reevaluating movie like as the movie was happening. Like I had that kind of, this is just fun. And then, they're doing something. Pay attention, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I haven't seen that movie since I think 99. I watched it on video. So I don't know. I remember liking it a lot though. So.
Yeah.
It's definitely worth revisiting and seeing again. There's a reason that it stuck around that people still talk about it. I remember I saw it in Madison, Wisconsin. There was a gigantic old theater called the Orpheum, which is like a giant theater with a balcony, an old-fashioned theater. But they built in a second screen in the basement. And so it was this tiny little bowling alley site or like this really narrow screen. So I remember seeing it there. This is the random thing. My number one is also a movie that I saw on that Orpheum basement. It's so weird. Some of the places where you've seen movies. And that movie, seeing the movie the first time, I remember enough to remember exactly where I was on the screen and what screen I was at.
This is one of the many, many movies in the 99-2000 period that I watched on a couch with my uncle, both of us high out of our minds.
Would have helped catching all the connections there. Right. Yeah, it's really just the energy of the movie, too. It just carries you through. And it's short, too. It's 80 minutes long. It's
very compact, but it packs a lot into that.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. And it was very of the moment, of this kind of, like, club scene. I'm not cool enough to say it was a raver thing, but, right, you know, that kind of...
The girl,
like,
with the red hair and then the electronic music.
Yeah, totally. It was very cool.
But it still feels timeless. You know, you don't look at it and think, oh, this is a 90s movie. It's maybe with the music and the clothes, but it's not stuck in its time.
That was just enough off the mainstream that it felt inventive then. It can still feel kind of different now.
Right. You know, one of the things I've noticed watching all of these 90s movies all in a row recently is that if someone was going to make a movie that takes place in 1998, it wouldn't look like any of these movies. Like, people weren't thinking, like, when you do a contemporary movie, like, you don't dress, everyone's not wearing clothes from 1998. In our little Van Nuys studio here, not everything that was bought in 2018, right? You know,
certainly.
So it's like we live in this time, like, we know this, our present is always just artifacts of the past.
Yeah,
and
when people do
make period pieces, they don't always take that into account.
Everyone has a bright new 50s car.
Everyone has new shit. Yeah. But they would have had stuff since the 30s.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
Richard Linklater was talking about 12 years, what was it called?
Boy who grew up.
Yeah, I think it was originally called 12 Years. It was. Anyway, he's saying how they thought it would be cool to see how, you know, the fashions change over the 12 years, and there isn't much. We don't really change that much anymore. We don't have any distinct fashion anymore. And his theory was that it's technology changes so fast that we need something constant. And so
that's possible.
There really isn't, like, oh, those clothes are so 2011. Like, there just isn't.
I think there's a little bit of the fact that, like, when you start being able to, like, easily name a decade, then you think more, oh, I'm in this decade, so I got to change things up and make it different. Like the aughts, the teens, it seems weird. Once we get to the 20s, I bet, like, we'll, like, have things that are like, oh, those are 20s clothes. Those are 30s clothes.
I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. But I don't think we're ever going to go, those were aughts clothes at all. They can even say, oh, you had a BlackBerry instead of an iPhone or something. Like, that's going to be the
technology
thing.
Will be the thing. It is. Like, all the BuzzFeed, like, because now, like, I'm old enough that, like, you see, like, these kids, like, do you remember what it was like growing up in the aughts? No, I fucking don't. Because I'm an old man.
Being a grown adult.
That's right, yeah. and it was all this stuff that is, all technology, all TV shows, all whatever, you know. And it's not like, oh, we wore these kind of clothes. And a lot of times 90s and 80s kids.
We wore shirts and jeans or whatever. Like, it's the same clothes.
Yeah.
We don't have that anymore.
Run all around. Number two, it's great.
And I won't say much for my number two. It's Rushmore. Number two. We've already talked about it. The only thing worth saying that we didn't already talk about is literally one of the hardest times I've ever laughed in my life at a movie is when Bill Murray is stalking, as we said, stalking Olivia Williams, and he's talking on the phone to, I think, Max, right, and telling him, oh, she's not really worth it or whatever, and he keeps, like, looking around. But then there's just one little insert shot where he runs across and there's a couple kids playing basketball and he blocks the kid's shot for no fucking reason other than a dick. It's so great. It's so fucking great. And the first time I saw it wasn't even a theater. It was on Conan. That's the clip that got me in the theater. Oh, my God, that's hilarious. And that got me in there. But, yeah, it's a great movie.
And it kind of set the tone for, like, at that time, you hadn't seen comedies like that with those kind of pacing and those kind of jokes, and sort of set the tone for what the 2000s kind of comedy would be, where you would have more like the old theater of awkwardness and the absurd and everything, where comedy got a lot less broad and a lot more insular and about just people feeling strange, in awkward situations, not broad situations.
It's also worth mentioning that this is like one of the movies where you can see his Salinger thing come in, his Salinger fetish come in, because this is Catcher in the Rye, and the Glass Family is Royal Tenenbaums, you know, and you can really, really see that in Royal Tenenbaums, but this is, he's very, you know, prep kid, you know, kind of thing. He doesn't have a breakdown or anything, but it's very, there was a nice thing on BuzzFeed that showed, or somewhere on the internet, that showed how Max's clothes and his dad being a barber are very Peanuts.
Oh, yeah.
Very Charlie Brown.
Yeah, that's very intentional.
Cool.
Yeah. Now, and what's this? Seymour Cassell as his dad. Yeah. He was there's a great, what's the name of the movie? I'm going to, if you don't mind, he was in a John Cassavetes movie called Minnie and Moskowitz.
Okay.
And that's, if you want to see him in his younger days as a leading man, he's basically a pixie dream man. And this, so an older middle class or upper middle class woman falls in love with this working class guy, right, that's Seymour Cassell.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he just acts crazy, but she falls in love with him. And it's really neat to see.
Because I mostly know him from
Max Fisher's dad.
Yeah.
As a leading man, it's really worth seeing.
Yeah. And also, like, he was in, like, the elevator operator in Tenenbaums.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So who pretends to be the doctor? Who pretends to be Royal's doctor and is giving, like, medical advice at the wedding? It's great. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. We'll come to Ryan for your number one.
Okay. My number one is definitely in my top 10 of favorite movies of all time. Right ahead of Big Lebowski. That would be The Truman Show.
Right. Yeah. Also on our
intro. Weird.
Huh? We have two movies from
In case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Yeah.
Which is a great line, a great ending to that movie. And this is crazy because this movie is like, you know, it's about a boy who is sort of adopted by a company and is televised his entire life. And everyone who speaks to him is an actor and he's being watched by millions of people on TV every day and he doesn't realize it. And I remember thinking at the time, loving, loving, loving this movie, but thinking the premise is completely ridiculous and would never happen. But yeah, it would definitely happen. I could definitely see that happening today and being watched by millions of people. If there was some kind of way to get around it legally, there'd be like some, you know, third world country where they like, and where they could do this. And then everyone would be like, this is terrible, but we'd watch it.
I'm kind of shocked that it hasn't happened, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, I am too. And it sort of predicted the internet culture in a way, like because of that sort of, you know, short attention span, way that we have on the internet. Like the ending of this movie is so great because, you know, he breaks out of this prison that he's in.
Sure.
And everyone's watching on TV and it shows like clips of like various people all throughout the world watching him.
Yeah.
And they all cheer him on, like, yay, Truman, he got on. And then the very last thing is like two security guards who are watching on TV and like, what else is on? And then he just picks up the remote and then changes it. And it's like that is so the internet and when you're like on Twitter, oh god, that's terrible. Retweet. Okay, what else is there?
You know, I've really like felt guilty about that and had to stop myself from doing that. Like when these horrible articles are coming out.
Yeah.
And the impulse is to keep scrolling and go away from something. And I've had to lately like say, no, focus in. This is especially with some of the most recent terrible things.
Migrant children.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like no, this deserves my attention. But then still, I mean, in whatever a half hour or whatever, I'm on to something else.
Yeah.
That's just the way life is right now.
Yeah, and that was that wasn't really the way it was in 1998, but he predicted that really well. And it has like some of the greatest performances. Like Jim Carrey can go too far and too manic and too attention hogging, and he doesn't do that in this movie except for in like two or three scenes where it's required, where it works for the story. Like when he's really starting to figure it out, and he takes Laura Linney on the car ride. He's like, "Where are we going? Who knows?" And then like just drives off. And she's like trying to stop him and everything. And it fits so well with this character who is losing his mind. So yeah, he would start to act out in this way. And her performance is so good. And she's so like just this woman that's like, encased in glass. She's like how you watch movies. It's like she, no emotion, like nothing penetrates her. Like, and he's like, you know, freaking out about these things. She's like, would you like some Cocoa Crisps? And she does a little ad, and he's like, "Who are you talking to?" Like, it's just she has no like real soul. Like, I guess that would be required for someone to agree.
Well, while she's playing the part, because if I recall, like then like when he finally breaks, then she's like kind of like, "Get me the fuck out of here!" Like, what are you guys doing? You
know? She's like, "This is unprofessional."
Yeah.
Because he like grabs her and like attacks her. She's like, "You're being unprofessional." Yeah, she's great. He's great. And then there's also, you know, Ed Harris plays
God. And he was like, you know, watching Truman his entire life, and just like such a, it's such a great character there. And then there's like even like smaller parts like Noah Emmerich, who's yeah, in The Americans, which ends next Wednesday, and I'm scared and sad because people are gonna die. No one's watching that show but me. But
well, I mean, no one here, but I mean, a lot of people on the internet, at least. I see a lot of people talking about it. Todd Vanderwerf always has a take.
Yeah. So, yeah, Noah Emmerich plays Truman's best friend, or he plays an actor who plays Truman's best friend. And there's a great scene where he's talking to him, and like, you know, I would never lie to you when you talk. And then and then you slowly realize Ed Harris is feeding him every single line that he's saying. Yeah. It's so cool, and it's just, it gives me chills.
Yeah, I rewatched it after we talked about it, I think last year at some point, and it holds up.
Yeah.
It really holds up. It's good. Great. It's good.
I haven't seen it since 1998.
Yeah.
You should watch that one
I should watch it again. I remember, I think I mentioned this the last time we brought it up, but at the time I thought, well, if I was 15, it would have been my favorite movie.
It was your first introduction to this concept.
Right, But yeah.
But no, it's good. It's like a solid movie.
Yeah.
I don't know what Peter Weir's done since, but he did a lot of stuff.
He did like that Long Way Back or something with Colin Farrell and a couple where there's like people, some guys get lost in like the Siberian, snow and like have to travel for 1,000 miles to get back or something like that. I never saw it. But yeah, I fancied myself a Peter Weir fan, and then it just turns out, no, I'm just a fan of this movie. So.
Yeah, not even Dead Poets Society. You want to even go that far?
That's fun. I like it. It's fun. A good movie. Yeah.
So also in 1998 was a movie called Ed TV.
Which is like the same. Was that 99?
It came around the same time. It was like the armor. It was like the double volcano movies.
I think it was slightly playing off it. Maybe even early 2000s. Also, I think it was,
not a good movie.
Right,
I was going to say, there also was a show called Ed, so it gets very confusing.
99 was that one, with McConaughey and Ellen DeGeneres or something.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Thank God she found her niche, because she was not an actress.
No, she was not an actress.
She's a comedian in the 80s, anyway.
Don't soil this with that.
Sorry, that was funny. I remember them coming out around the same time.
He also was aware that he was on it. He wasn't like, great movie that I love very much.
Awesome. Okay, Lawrence, what is your number one?
My number one is Afterlife, a Japanese film directed by Hirokazu Koreeda. And this is one I saw in the basement of the Orpheum Theater in Madison, Wisconsin. Yeah. And do you ever hear about this? Know about it?
No.
Okay. It's basically these people work at this building, and what happens when you die? You show up at this building, and you've got 7 days to remember. Like the people are dead, they try to remember their happiest moment in their life, and then these people build a set and film you in your happiest moment, and then you watch the movie and you disappear. It's high concept, but the movie itself is just shot very plainly, very austerely. It's just this rundown building where these people work. The employees there, they're just going about their jobs. Early on in the movies, a lot of people like interviews with people about their happiest memory. It was also during that sequence, there's a lot of the characters that you follow on through this movie. There's also just regular people that you don't know are actors. They're just talking about their happiest moment in their life.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and there's people. It's funny. A lot of the things are just like sad people at their worst who like experience a moment of grace, and that becomes the happiest moment. Like this guy who was captured by American soldiers. You're remembering that point, and that's his happiest moment, which is. Yeah. It's crazy, but out of this sadness, you get this happy moment.
Yeah.
There's also so the workers there, they just go through this job. It's very bureaucratic, very just there's this rundown brick building.
Yeah.
This is all the paint's chipping, and this is all faded out. And there's this one, so like this young girl, probably in her teens or early 20s, and she's talking about her about Disneyland, and then you see like the one of the younger employees, he's just like rolls her eyes. He's just like. Bored that someone's saying their happiest moment is being at Disneyland. and then she later, that she goes and talks to that girl and says, you know, You're like the 20th person that's talked about Disneyland.
That's pretty great.
Yeah. And then she comes up with a different memory after that. Yeah. But then people talking about like it's so then like this inner it goes day by day, and then like by Wednesday, it's like this is the deadline. You have to have come with your memory by now. So it's like this intercom saying that you need to do this. So it's like this all this bureaucratic procedural thing. And then after they get their memory, then it goes to like the guys building the sets, and you have people going like doing scouting locations, and then the one guy who's remembered like flying an airplane, flying a Cessna. Mm-hmm. And so they work, so the employees do what they can do with their stuff, but they only have a plane, it's a Piper. And so they show the guy, well, this plane worked. This is what we have that we can work with. Would this work for your movie? Like, no, I remember this is a Piper. The wings are on the bottom. The Cessna has wings above. And what I really need is I don't really care about anything but the movie, but anything else about the interior of the plane, but the wings have to be above. Then okay, what if we cut off the wings and put them above the plane, above the fuselage? Well, that works. They try it out. I said, yeah, this is great. This works out. So it also becomes about making movies and.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
There's a lot going on there. So it's all about the memories. And while you're watching the movie, you try to think about, you end up trying to think about what your own happiest moment would be. And I just rewatched it a couple weeks ago, and it's amazing. Like, it's about life. It's about memories. And also, I just love movies about making movies, about the illusion of movies. And it's about the illusion of what movies can do. Yeah. And, mm-hmm. how memories are never, or aren't exactly, they're not reality.
Yeah.
Your memories mm-hmm. have been twisted, and they acknowledge that.
Yeah.
And just like the understatedness, and like there's, you don't actually, it's not like people like just disappear while they're watching. There's no like real special effects or anything happening. It's just,
that sounds fascinating. Competition. That sounds like a great thing.
Yeah, and it was I remember seeing it in the theater. I hadn't seen it again until just recently, but it always stuck in my head. It was always something that I'd think about.
Yeah,
and then rewatching it was just I was blown away. And it's also really different seeing a movie like that about life, about mortality and memory, seeing that at 23 or 24.
When you're never going to die.
Right. And then seeing it again at 43.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's totally different.
You're like, I am going to die.
Right. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. I'm probably halfway there if I'm lucky.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and having a kid and having
happy
times in my life, you know, and there's, it's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Having those times that are like.
New York is what it sounds like.
Yeah. Sounds like a more hopeful.
Right. Yeah. At 23. Like I was trying to, I had seen that, when I saw that 23, I wondered what I was. Would have thought my happiest moment would be.
Yeah,
I just gotten married, so maybe I couldn't say getting married.
But what about other people? Do they actors portray the other people, or like how do you? Because most memories are with other people that you love, you know, right?
Yeah, there are always there's like these moments. Like there's one guy riding in a train car and seeing a guy who blowing it, or like standing in the front of the train car. It was a hot day, and seeing the air blowing on this guy's face.
That's his moment.
Yeah, being in the train car.
Something transcendent.
Yeah, and then the whole when the workers are discussing how they're going to do that, they're like sitting around a table. They pull out this guy's file. They're talking about it and say, "Well, you know, it's portraying heat on film, that's hard to do. We'll have to spritz them with some water and everything." There's
nice.
It's called Afterlife.
And it's two words, not after space life.
Right. Yeah. All right. Sure.
Yep. Right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I have a very anticlimactic number one because it's Big Lebowski.
Right.
So we already talked about it. I mean, it's just, and as I said, the first time that I watched it, I think what was getting to me, I was searching for a plot desperately. I was laughing at some things. I will say it's interesting that, Ryan, that you bring up how irritated Bridges was by Goodman as Walter, because that was part of the thing with me, too. Like, it was like so. Like, what are you doing? Like, when he takes control, you're ruining, stop it. And I got so, like, upset about that I think that really colored my view of the movie.
Feeling bad for Donnie. You know, like, why are they so aggressively
why are they so mean to Donnie? Donnie?
Yeah. Come on, guys. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. I'm the walrus. You're like a child who walks into a... Oh, and again, anyway, we could do this for another 10 minutes. The point is, that is now, even though it definitely was not at the time. At the time, I don't know. Life is Beautiful probably would have been my number one. It's interesting we didn't talk at all about Shakespeare in Love. We've had that conversation before. Mm-hmm. I think it's a fine movie. I've seen it, but, you know, it would probably not even be in my number 10 now. Mm-hmm. But it definitely would have at the time. It would have been like number 2 or 3 or whatever. That and Ryan would have been right in that kind of, you know, the top three. But not anymore. I mean, it's just these are the movies that, now when I think about them, they're inventive, or in this case, just funny, just quotable and just rewatchable. And mm-hmm. that and Rushmore are movies that I just will not pass up because they're so fun. I would even watch the TV cut of Lebowski, which famously has "This is what happens when you chase a stranger through the Alps."
Yeah. Find a stranger in the Alps, right?
Find a stranger in the Alps. Fuck a stranger in the Alps becomes find a stranger in the Alps. Yeah. It was like, why even put the? It was like that in Pulp Fiction, where the why even try to put these movies on regular TV?
Yeah,
but they had syndicated.
Seems like they're
cuts.
Trying to be funny with that. Like come they were. On. Like that's they were. Even, that's absurd.
Yeah, and so it was. You would watch the Lebowski cut because they had gone out of the way, like, just fuck with the syndicated cut because they knew they weren't going to do anything. So yeah, that line
that's
was
fun.
Ridiculous. Yeah. So, but yeah, I've.
And to your point with, like, being irritated, I guess you can be much more easily less irritated when you watch it again when you know that none of this matters.
Yeah, it's going to happen. Yeah, exactly. And that's it. Yeah. And so I just let it go.
Yeah, and the Coen brothers have those Shaggy Dog movies. Like,
right,
you
know,
Burn After Reading. And
I know, but
Caesar,
I can't let go of Burn After Reading. I still get irritated. Yeah, even though I like the ending.
I just don't think that's my problem with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Big Lebowski holds up.
Yeah, it really does.
The most out of those.
And I should add, because I texted Jonathan and asked him what his favorite movies were for 98.
Okay.
He said Out of Sight. He also said A Soldier's Daughter Never Cries, which I haven't seen.
I've never heard of that. No.
I've heard of that. And The Last Days of Disco, which I have heard of.
I've heard of that.
Daughter Never Cries. I feel like I've seen it, but I wouldn't do some Googling to remember what that was.
Very good.
So anyway, just thought I'd throw that in there.
All right. So,
what were the Oscar? Oh, what were the Oscar winners of 1998? It was Shakespeare in Love.
Shakespeare in Love. Yeah, it was Shakespeare in Love against
Beating Out.
Beating Out.
Private Ryan, which outraged me at the time, still kind of does. But,
I remember we were like when I heard about it for whatever reason. Ms. Von Helsman and I were at a bar, and like we're not paying attention to the Oscars. And then like here someone said Shakespeare in Love one. I said, oh, that's weird. And I went back.
It's a mystery.
To a drink. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to say that like the top five, I don't know. Well, Life is Beautiful was up for Best Picture for sure, and so was Elizabeth. Elizabeth is not a good movie, but it was up for Best Picture. And I can't remember what Ram.
Yeah, they were wrong, as usual.
Was it Quiz Show or something? No, it's 99. Yeah. I don't know.
The Quiz Show was earlier.
No, Quiz Show was 99.
Quiz Show was like 94.
Really?
Quiz Show was 94. Yeah, that is a good year. 94 is a good movie year. Anyway, we never got to do 94 because we weren't doing this in 2014. But
well, we could go back. Yeah, I'd rather. I think after 99, we should go back to.
Back. Yeah, we got to
jump around.
Go back 30 years.
Anything in 2000 to do.
That's true. 99.
And I like to say that I'm a fan of pre 21st century film.
That's true. Yeah, it's kind of your catchphrase.
Right. Right.
All right. Well, next time.
Oh, yeah, this is it.
Yeah, this is it.
Who dies?
This is it. Cheers, guys. Right, it's been 2 years.
We can to figure out who dies, we need to do some killing of a sacred deer thing.
I'm going to strap a shotgun to George and have George to randomly go around.
So, all right, good show. Good 2 years.
This has been fun, and it'll continue to be fun. We hope you'll stick with us for Worth a Click. And if you are a Worth a Click fan, maybe you've found a way to come back here and listen to this stuff.
Yeah.
So, and until then, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.